So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
It's Jane Klaus in for Anna DeVlantis this afternoon. As you know, I spend my weekends working at Living Healthy Chicago on WGN-TV, so it's great to be here today with one of my favorite guests ever. He's a guy you want on speed dial. He's the chief of cardiology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine and associate director of the Bloom Cardiovascular Institute, Northwestern Memorial Hospital. He's a professor of medicine, professor of medical social sciences, and the deputy editor of JAMA Cardiology. I mean, I told you you want him on speed dial. He is my friend, Dr. Clyde Yancey. Hi, Dr. Yancey.
There is nothing like visiting with Jane. This is like the highlight of my year when we get to do this. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Happy birthday to you. I know that you had a birthday this week.
Ripe old age of 63.
I don't believe it. What's your secret? What's your secret to good health and staying young?
You know, it's exercise and having a good disposition and following a heart-healthy diet. You and I have talked about heart-healthy diets. For a decade, they actually worked, Jane.
And, you know, you practice what you preach and what you teach, actually, which is why you had another birthday.
Fingers crossed that we can keep doing this. How about that?
I'm sure we will. So, Dr. Yancey, we have to talk COVID-19 first. Let's talk about COVID-19 and heart health. If you get the virus, does it affect your heart in any way?
So let's talk about three dimensions of COVID-19 and heart health.
Okay.
First, if you already have established cardiovascular disease, and that includes high blood pressure, it makes you more vulnerable to the novel coronavirus infection, which then leads to COVID-19. That's the first key consideration. Second, there is evidence that when you have one of these underlying vulnerabilities, the manifestations, the experience, the consequences of COVID-19 may be a bit more compelling. And so it's something about which we need to know so that we don't hesitate to understand if we have COVID-19, knowing that we've got a pre-existing condition. Here's the other thing that's really important about this, and it reflects new information. There is evidence that in the setting of COVID-19, there is a slightly higher likelihood that you may end up with a cardiovascular complication. That cardiovascular complication can fall in one of three camps. One, you can develop blood clots that may either lead to something like a heart attack or even a stroke. Two, you may actually develop transient weakness of the heart muscle. Some of us would call that inflammation of the heart muscle. Scientifically, we would call that myocarditis. But that's pretty unusual. And three, you may be predisposed. That means you may be at risk, higher risk, for something known as atrial fibrillation. So I've given you three really important domains about this intersection between heart disease and COVID-19.
Yeah, and so, and that's interesting because obviously when this, you know, first came, you didn't know anything about it, you know. So in over the last 10, 11 months, you're learning more and more on how this affects the heart. With these last complications that you mentioned, these last three, are those lifelong effects?
So excellent question. It really is important because we've learned that those persons who had no inkling of cardiac involvement at the time of the active infection actually are the people that are at risk for evidence of heart involvement 2-3 months after the fact. So it really does force you to keep your antenna raised and know that this possibility exists. Second, for those people that come in with a totally different set of symptoms, something that we don't even think is cardiovascular, we have to recognize now that the effects of this virus and this viral infection can actually be quite substantial. Kidney disease, obviously lung disease, heart disease, definitely neurologic disease. So if there's any evidence of COVID-19 anywhere, Jay, we need to suspect that it might be present everywhere. That's disheartening,
right?
I understand. But the good news is that many of these consequences, can be overcome just with reasonable supportive care. Thankfully, we've got the vaccine, and we can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a way to minimize those effects if we maybe we don't have a precondition or a pre-existing heart condition and we get the virus? Is there a way to minimize those effects, or that just sort of happens?
So, Jane, you really answered the question before you raised it, because you made a very important point. We don't even have one full year yet of experience with COVID-19 in the U.S. Imagine how much we've learned in just about 10 months, meaning that expect there to be questions for which we're still seeking answers. And this is one of those questions that needs more information. Whom is it that really is at risk for developing irregular heart rhythms, for developing this myocarditis problem? Whom is it that's really at risk for even developing the infection to begin with? We have some crude indicators that if you've got high blood pressure, obesity, particularly if you're older, that seems to make you more vulnerable. But we can become more sophisticated, and we're working towards that. There's so many research efforts ongoing. But you answered the question yourself. We've learned a tremendous amount in a very short time, but we need to learn more.
Yeah, and I apologize for asking these questions where I know we don't really have a lot of experience with COVID-19. I know that you are working with all of your really smart doctor friends and researchers on trying to get these answers to us, but it's just sort of the things that we're thinking about because we want to know, like, if I don't have a pre-existing condition, if I work out extra hard and I really stay in shape, is that going to help me minimize these effects? But we don't know because we don't know all that much yet. About the virus completely. I should say we don't know completely about the virus.
Yeah, I mean, as the vernacular would put it, we don't know because we don't know.
Right.
But Jane,
right. Don't
ever apologize, because the way that people who do the kind of work that I do as investigators, as researchers, execute our work is to listen to people that are experiencing this condition. You are the voice for so many people in our community, and you're letting us understand that people really want to know, am I at risk for heart involvement? Mm-hmm. Am I at risk for irregular heart rhythm? How can you help me understand that risk? And what we can tell you right now is that if you already have any of that, you're more likely to get the infection and maybe have more complications. With regard to a specific new complication, right now we can't tell you the person that's most likely to be in that space. If you've had that complication before, though, it is a likelihood that you may experience, say, this irregular heart rhythm again, or maybe some myocardial problems again. But for right now, active surveillance, a high index of suspicion, and really respecting the fact that, you know, Jane, something that's really remarkable is that outcomes have very quietly become much better for people who experience this infection. The in-hospital rates of death are lower. The number of deaths per day is daunting because the infection is spreading so much, but we are able to take the edge off the critical care piece a bit, not completely, but a bit. So we're learning how best to help people get through this.
And one more quick question before we break, and then we'll come back and talk about vaccine. If after recovery from COVID-19, somebody is still short of breath, say, after a simple movement, maybe getting out of a chair, getting out of bed, are we able to determine yet if it's the lungs that are still healing or if it's a heart issue?
We have very good insight on this question because we didn't just start dealing with really serious respiratory infections in the setting of viral events, pandemics, if you will. We've been through SARS-CoV-1. We've been through MERS. We've been through, on an annual basis, influenza. We know what to expect when a virus impacts the lungs and causes a severe pneumonia. We know what kind of pictures to take. We know what kind of symptoms to experience. And we have enough ability to discriminate the origin of these symptoms using sophisticated testing that one doesn't need to do a coin flip. We can actually very quickly elucidate, is this lung disease, is this heart involvement, mm-hmm. and provide the right kind of supportive care. So medicine has come a long way just in the last few years being able to do this.
In the last 10 months.
Absolutely.
All right, Dr. Yancey, can you hang on just a quick minute? We're going to take a break. I want to come back and talk about the vaccines, and I want to talk about heart health and ways to live a healthy life outside of COVID-19.
Can't wait. Thanks.
All right. We'll be right back after the break. Jane Clausen for Anna DeBlantis this afternoon. Joining me on the phone is Dr. Clyde Yancey from Northwestern Medicine. He's the chief of cardiology. Hi, Dr. Yancey. Before the break, we were talking about COVID-19 and how it affects the heart. You mentioned vaccines. Let's talk vaccines.
This is the most important question that we can address.
Yeah.
Because who is it in our listening space that isn't keenly aware of the price we have collectively paid for COVID-19? We're still in the middle of it. I think it's correct. These are our darkest days with COVID-19, and we have a number of weeks, if not months, ahead of us that we must endure before we see some clear space and some relief from this. But one of the most important steps that will get us to that point of relief quicker, better, sooner, is use of the vaccine. In the state of Illinois, we just heard yesterday that there are plans now that are being launched for phase 1B. Phase 1A was healthcare workers like me. I've been attending in the COVID-19 unit, and so we've been protecting healthcare workers, but now we're going to the next tier. The next tier will be those persons over the age of 65. Why? Because it is advanced age more than anything else. Race, pre-existing cardiovascular disease, you name it. It is age more than anything else that puts people not only at risk for COVID-19, but at risk for the complications and the most dire consequence, which is death. And so we really need to protect our population. And oh, by the way, this includes nursing home residents. There'll be some essential workers that will be included in phase 1B, and that's being refined by public health officials. But here's a key consideration. We have to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. Let's think about the numbers, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
There are over 300 million people in this country.
Yeah.
We need to get to about 70%, 65 to 70% that are immunized, either because they've had the condition or because they've received the vaccine. And the vaccine is for persons over the age of 18. So if you take a very conservative number, if we did a million vaccinations a day, it would take us 6 months. Once you put it in those terms, you recognize that we really are at a point of a call to arms. We need that kind of momentum on the manufacture of the vaccines, on the dissemination of the vaccines, and then on the inoculation in arms of people in the community, whether that will be through drugstores, through community service centers, through doctor's offices. But we have to have a call to arms that's tantamount to the biggest public health effort we've ever seen in our generation. And so these are the reasons why it's so important to have this discussion, to pay attention to the priority list, and to sign up early so that we can all get vaccinated as quickly as possible and protect our communities.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big effort. It's a big undertaking. As you said, if you do the numbers, if we have roughly 330 million people in the U.S. and you do a million a day, I mean, you got to do the math there. But we got to be able to sign up. And so that's a big issue, a big problem. I don't say problem. That's wrong. It's something that we're working on so that everybody can get vaccinated. But as we're talking about the vaccine, some people are like, eh, I'll pass. As it rolls out, and yes, everyone should get vaccinated, are there concerns that it may affect any other medications that people are taking?
So let's really think about this, because it is so appropriate for you to bring up the possibility that people may be ambivalent. They may feel as if I'm not convinced. All I can tell you is listen to my voice and listen to the conviction of my voice.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most brilliant application of science we've seen in our lifetime. The core scientific principle evolved over 10 years ago in response to a previous pandemic. The discovery that there was another biological switch that might be instrumental in facilitating or allowing this infection became the key moment of awareness. And once we understood the genetics of this novel coronavirus, we were able to quickly find the presence of that switch. When you hear us talk about mRNA in the scientific news and sometimes in the lay news, that's that switch, that's that target that we're talking about. So we don't have to go for the whole virus. We just have to go for that switch that links the virus to the cells in the body. This is rapidly evolved into not just the candidate vaccine, but trials involving tens of thousands of people with clear evidence that receiving the vaccine not just reduces your risk, but substantially reduces your risk. I know I'm going on, but this is important information, so I want to say one more thing, Jane.
Sure.
We declared, we being the science community, with Dr. Fauci as a leader in this, we declared that if the vaccine was just 60% effective, maybe even 50% effective, it would be worthwhile to administer. It turns out the vaccines are 90-plus percent effective. The two that are available in this country, the one at Oxford is 85% effective.
Wow.
We've got another vaccine under rapid clinical trial review right now where it's only one dose, not the two doses that we're experiencing. This is amazing science. I understand there are those that are ambivalent, those that are concerned, those that believe it's been too much too quick. But again, listen to my voice and the conviction of my voice.
Yeah.
This is the most brilliant use of science we've ever had. This is applying science in the most effective way we've ever been able to. And if we are successful, and based on the data we have with virtually zero important side effects, yes, pain and some fevers and some muscle aches, particularly with the second injection, but nothing calamitous. When you think about that, and when you appreciate that we're over 1,000 deaths per day, over 300,000 deaths in the past 12 months, hospitals at breaking points in different states in the country, the risk-benefit really does tip way in favor of getting vaccinated. Can I personally guarantee that you won't have a side effect? Of course not.
Right.
Have I taken a vaccine? Yes, I have, and tomorrow I will take the second dose.
And I love the conviction in your voice, so thank you so much for saying that. And a good question that came through on the text line, 815, says, can you get the vaccine while you have tested positive for COVID-19?
We're still vaccinating people despite a prior history of COVID-19, but your priority is a little bit lower because we assume that you've developed natural antibodies for at least some period of time. But, yes, everyone needs to get vaccinated. But if you've had the infection, you move a little bit down the line to let some other people get protected first.
All right, so I want to switch gears to heart health because I only get you for a couple more minutes, and you are a wealth of knowledge. Every time I get you, I need to ask you all of these questions. So switching gears here, Google searching for the word heart attack spiked last year, especially early in the pandemic. What are the basics we need to know before you start Googling heart attack and when we should go to the ER instead?
So let's start with the last part of what you said. One of the painful experiences from COVID-19 was that people were so frightened to present to any emergency facility, even a call an ambulance.
Correct.
That people across the country, including Chicago, were dying at home with heart attacks that were not treated out of fear of coming into the hospital. Let me reassure everyone, every hospital in the city of Chicago has set up dual tracks of care for those that are suspected of having COVID-19 and for those that have acute emergencies without the high suspicion of COVID-19. Everyone gets tested, but we don't want anyone to be hesitant about coming in for care and getting these questions answered. The excess number of deaths that aren't discussed as much as they should be, likely at twice the number of deaths that we can attribute to COVID-19, and that excess number of deaths is because of healthcare-seeking behavior that has dramatically changed in the setting of COVID-19. So let's not let that be the case. But here's the other thing. The heart attacks that you and I have talked about over the last decade, mm-hmm. the symptoms, the experience, the root causes, you know what? They're still the same. Starts with your family history, your diet, your lifestyle, whether or not you smoke. Hopefully no one does. If you do smoke, you're trying to stop as soon as possible. It starts with understanding what is a heart-healthy diet. How can you protect yourself just by virtue of what you eat? And recognizing that whenever you feel ill at ease, let me say this again, ill at ease in your chest, in your breathing, in your stamina, don't dismiss it. It's much better to get a negative answer, no, there's nothing to worry about, than to have a tragedy.
So I like that you're, you know, ill at ease. A lot of times we have anxiety, And a lot of times we're worried. So
and sometimes that's the symptom, particularly for women. So if there's something uniquely different, at least call and speak to your favorite nurse, speak to your physician, your family practitioner, speak to someone that can interpret what you're experiencing. But I hate the idea of reducing this chest pain because so many people interpret that differently. That's why I wanted to be very clear. If you are feeling ill at ease in those different spaces, that should prompt a phone call.
Yeah, so it should. I would say, can we worry ourselves into heart problems?
Well, what we can certainly do is worry about the heart problem that didn't receive optimal care.
All right, so I've got a minute left, Dr. Yancey. These are going to be firing questions about heart health. Should we be taking fish oil supplement regularly?
We should be eating fish regularly.
Will an apple a day really keep Dr. Yancey away?
I never walk by an apple without eating it, unless I did, unless I didn't buy it.
I was looking for the fibrous fruit answer. Yes, they're good for you. Can I drink wine?
Yes, one or two glasses of red wine, and I can't wait for you and I to sit down and share a glass of wine when this is settled.
I cannot wait for that either. And can we eat steak or red meat? Is it bad for you?
Lean protein, fish, chicken, beef, pork, etc., totally a part of a heart-healthy diet, but it is about the word that no one likes to hear, moderation. But what does moderation really mean? Is it bigger than the palm of your hand? If it's bigger than the palm of your hand, that's not moderation. If you can close your fist around it, that's moderation.
And what about birthday cake, birthday boy?
Enjoy it. Blow the candles out. But don't give me 63 candles. That's not happening.
We'll give you 9. I like just to start adding the numbers together. Dr. Clyde Yancey, thank you so much for joining us today. Great information. I could talk to you for the next 3 hours.
All right. Let's do this again. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.